Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and 4. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for Thursday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly is also here for the opening hour of the program. Joe Reedy from the Cincinnati Inquirer, who's the Bengals beat writer, coming up in 10 minutes. And Russell S. Baxter, ESPN research coordinator, and the all-knowing Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us in the 3 o'clock hour to begin his regular Thursday stint with us here inside the playbook. What's going on today? What the hell's happening? Anything new
nothing
I should
much.
Know about?
Nope.
No? Nothing
not really.
New? Number 12 was out at quarterback at practice today?
He was out there, full pads, the whole shebang. Didn't talk to the media today. Did so at length yesterday, but
Did he get involved in some sort of like off-field skirmish or something?
Not a skirmish. He had a little fender bender.
Right.
Had some front-end damage to his Audi.
Wow, I thought the world was coming to an end at about 9:15 this morning.
I was unable to see or hear any of the reports once I got into the office because of just our schedule and work and what we do. But what was it like? What was being reported?
I happened to be on my Facebook page. And, because I usually check it because I get, a lot of people from different walks of life on, not just Patriots fans, but Patriots fans are welcome. And obviously, hey, we want them to chat on the program here while we're on. But I'm on Facebook page, and then I noticed one of my friends who's also in the media said that EEI had just reported, and almost instantaneously from, I guess, when EEI had it on during the Dennis and Callahan show this morning, I get a text from Kevin Collins.
Breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news, And so, I, tweeted what Kevin said just, because, frankly, when I get the stuff, I'll be happy to pass it along, which is why we do what we do here. But I'm thinking then, and after that happened, I just got deluged. And so I'm thinking, I don't know anything other than what is being already reported. So I just passed that along.
Were TV stations cutting in to programming and going live and doing things like that?
A couple of them were, yes. I know New England Cable News did. I heard Channel 7 did. I'm not sure who else did because those are the only ones that I got to. But we quickly found out for those that for some reason have not been around a computer or something today that yet the story was is Tom Brady this morning was on ComAv and
Gloucester Street.
He had a green light. He was proceeding through a green light and a van truck type
minivan.
Basically ran a red light going the other way. Tom was in the right, the van was in the wrong. And Tom ended up T-boning him, is basically what happened. And if you haven't seen yet, you can probably go online and see the photos. In fact, I put Tom's car up on my my Facebook page earlier. He had front-end damage to his Audi, which he drives. The van looked total, completely caved in. In fact, they had to use the jaws of life to extricate the passenger in that van, who apparently is still in serious but, stable condition.
Mm-hmm. Not life-threatening.
Not life-threatening. Tom got up, walked out, refused all medical assistance at the site. He came on. He called somebody on his cell phone. In fact, somebody I saw tweeted a cell phone photo of him making that phone call as well. I don't have that photo, but I saw it on Channel 6. No, it was on New England Cable News where I saw it earlier today. Got somebody to come pick him up, and he came right to the stadium, which I'm sure he was checked out. And as you suggested, he has been practicing with the team this afternoon. So, we can all breathe a collective sigh of relief over, another not 2 years ago all over again, although that happened on the field, the injury at Kansas City. First of all, we're fortunate that nobody was seriously, in danger of possibly having life-threatening injuries out of that accident today because, somebody was trying to beat a light and obviously thought they could do it. And, guess who you just ran into?
Yeah.
One of the most recognizable faces on the planet.
Mm.
Can you imagine?
I know. What a way to start the morning. 6:30 in the morning.
So, at any rate,
But yeah, he got to the stadium a little late.
Got to the stadium a little late, but obviously
but took part in the there was a walkthrough.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So. There were team meetings he missed a little bit of, so he had to catch up on meetings. Right. Once he got here, but he was out on the practice field. They were in full pads again.
Right.
Didn't look any worse for wear.
Nope.
So I think, like you said, you can breathe this collective sigh of relief that it wasn't any worse than it was for everybody involved.
Yeah.
The one person who's hospitalized, that's unfortunate. Obviously, it could have been a lot worse for that person, too, because, like you said, it was a T-bone accident.
Yeah.
So that person
that van
took the
definitely
brunt.
Got the worst of it.
Yeah, and the passenger on the van took the brunt of it.
That's the first thing. And when you look at the picture of Tom's car, you're thinking, wow, and he T-boned the guy? I mean, it doesn't look like a whole lot of damage. So if I'm Audi... I'm feeling pretty good about, you know, my car, my vehicle, the company I represent now, because you just had a very famous person, you know, have a major accident in your car, and your car looks barely touched except for some front end dents.
Well, it's just unfortunate our star quarterback happened to be the crash test.
Yeah, but I'm already thinking commercials if I'm an Audi guy right now. I'm trying to figure out a way to, you know, turn this into a positive.
Well, it also wasn't highway speeds.
Yes.
You know, it was COMAV, so it was relatively... low-speed accident. So that could be why the damage that you saw wasn't as bad as you might have suspected, because
That's possible.
Totally high speed.
The van was doing the high speed. Tom was just proceeding through because the light was green.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he can't stop because this car is peeling through the intersection trying to beat a red, which obviously he didn't do. So it tells me the light had already turned red, and he's going through the intersection anyway.
Right.
Is how it usually
goes. Apparently a foam pole was struck. It sounds like
after
two cars met, it sounds like the van might have
hit the foam pole after
foam
Tom T-boned
down.
Him. Yeah, so that's what it looks like. Brian just chatted with me here. He says, yes, thank God for German engineering. Go Audi. They're looking pretty good right now. They're looking pretty good. If you've got an Audi, you've got to be pleased with the product. I had a Volvo for a number of years, was always really impressed with their engineering and the safeness of the car. And so obviously Audi's got to rank right up there in terms of safeness because, you know, obviously for the person in the passenger side of the vehicle that was damaged, that ran the light, to have to be pulled out with the jaws of life doesn't really bode very well for that particular make of automobile. If you know, if Tom's car barely looks scratched, and I'm kind of over exaggerating here.
Yeah, there was significant
got front
damage.
Front end damage on that car. Like I said, you got to check out the photo if you haven't seen it. It's on my Facebook site. You can certainly reach us by chatting on Facebook. Just friend me on Facebook, John Rook, Rooke. You can send us email, webradio@patriots.com. One of the easiest ways to get us as well. You can call in the program at 508-543-7482, area code 508-543-7482. You can also reach us via Twitter at JRook0722. All right, so there you go. There's several ways to get a hold of us here in the program, but if you want instantaneous feedback and to get your messages read right away, Facebook's probably the best way to go because I got that called up, and it's been great, actually, over the last couple of days. I had 25 new Patriots fans climbing on and becoming fans of the show, and it's that's an awesome way to do it, and happy to talk a little football with everybody. So now that we've got the big thing out of the way today, we need to turn our attention back to, primarily the game on Sunday, believe it or not. Joseph Reedy is the beat writer for the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cincinnati Inquirer, and he joins us here inside the playbook. John and Eric here in Foxborough, how is it going today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're fine.
Good, Jim.
We had, you know, our heart skip a beat or so earlier this morning when the whole Brady thing happened. So what was your initial reaction when you first heard about that happening today?
With an accident, you kind of get concerned because I think everybody would agree that if Tom got this contract deal sorted out by Sunday, it would be good for all parties involved, especially considering the knee injury he suffered a couple years ago. Your concern goes for his health and the health of the person in the other car. And when you hear jaws of life, you get concerned a little bit. But I'm glad to hear that he walked away okay, and it was just car damage and nothing else.
That seems to be the case. So we'll hope that other than probably a little soreness tomorrow,
He'll be certainly no worse for the wear on Sunday. You know, part of what we've been kind of talking about over the last couple of days is that we certainly kind of agree. We spoke at length yesterday with your radio play-by-play voice and for the Bengals, and quite frankly, I think we all sort of hold the Bengals as one of those teams in the AFC that certainly seems not only worthy of contending for the division, but potentially for the AFC championship, because this team seems to be making the right steps, seems to be proceeding in the right direction. Do you feel as if that is still the overall impression from those who follow the team, from fans, from other writers in and around Cincinnati about this Bengals franchise right now?
I think they can contend. The biggest thing is it is a very difficult schedule this year. I think they've got to be at least 5-3 and or 6-2 going into the second half run to have a shot at the division and possibly, you know, making a Super Bowl run, because I think we all admit in the AFC East probably one of the wild cards will come out of there between the Jets, Patriots, and you can't discount the Dolphins at all. So, you know, the West is weak. The South, there's a little bit of balance there. Who knows, might make a run. And then in the North, you got three strong teams in Baltimore, here in Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh, depending on what happens with the Roethlisberger thing. So I think everybody's kind of holding their breath right now. But the other thing, too, is there's a little bit less attention being paid to the Bengals because of the success the Reds are having now, too, leading their division and probably making a baseball playoffs.
You know, which is certainly an exciting time. We used to know all about that around here, but unfortunately, not lately.
Baseball coverage?
Yeah, coverage kind of mixing with football coverage. We've been used to that around here. And
yeah.
I guess that's, you know, comes from being, you know, sort of spoiled with all of that over the last few years. Where do you feel like the Bengals rank? Just bringing baseball into the equation for a second, Joe. Where do the Bengals rank in terms of popularity now? Have you seen it increase, stay the same? Where has that popularity gone in terms of the overall fortunes of the franchise?
I think the popularity certainly has increased, and part of that was Terrell arriving here for training camp. The attendance nearly doubled from last year, despite the fact that, A, there was one less week in Georgetown, and also considering, too, that Hard Knocks was your filming last year. So there was certainly a level of excitement here, but nothing like what we saw when Terrell signed. And, you know, I think the fans, for the most part, are excited. But as is a certain amount of teams right now, the home opener still hasn't sold out. None of the regular season games have sold out. Neither of the preseason games sold out. So, and this is a team that led the league last year in blackout extensions with 5. So I think there's a buzz, but it hasn't translated yet into sellouts.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Where do you attribute the I guess lack of you know sellout clout here? Is it to waiting and seeing about this football team whether or not it's real, or does it really have to do with the economy? Do you feel like in Cincinnati?
I think it's a combination of the economy. I think people still want to wait and see on this team. This is a club that has not made back-to-back playoff appearances in 28 years. And if you want to break it down even more, this is a team that has never made back-to-back playoff appearances with a full schedule. When they did, it was 81 and 82, and that was a strike here with the nine-game schedule. Now, that was a year after they won the AFC, so if there was a 16-game schedule, yeah, they probably would have made the playoffs, but still, facts are what they are. And I think the other thing, too, is Mike Brown could cure cancer tomorrow in this town or in this city and for the world, and people around here would still complain why it took him so long. I mean, Mike Brown, there is a certain point where Mike Brown can do nothing right after all the years of losing and stuff. And there's a big stigma attached to it, especially with fans with discretionary income that are kind of on the fence right now.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, I guess I can understand that after, you know, having some of the difficulties that have happened with the franchise over the years. I just get the impression, though, that, that Cincinnati, you know, Marvin Lewis is, has been, I think, a godsend for the franchise overall. This is just my impression from the outside here. But when Marvin Lewis came in, and knowing full well that if he was given the right amount of time, he was one of those guys that wasn't a retread, that, you know, hey, he was an up-and-coming assistant. He's the kind of guy that you wanted to see succeed because he was a new face in a situation that had clearly gone sour and had been sour for a while. So do people love Marvin Lewis now?
I think people love Marvin. I think one of the underlying storylines, though, this year is that Marvin's in the last year of his contract. The extension still hasn't been signed. I think it's partially money. I think it's partially control type things here. This was a franchise that when Marvin came in, there was a lot of overhauling that had to be done in the way that they do things. And they still approach it from a 50s or 40s mentality. I think he's certainly brought it up to a more modern era level, but, you know, in terms of certain things, the Bengals are still far and away behind the pack in a lot of things. So I think he's changed his mindset. I think in 2007, 2008, he had to purge the roster and bring in his type guys to where I think you saw last year for the first time since he was here, you could truly say this was a Marvin Lewis built team in his image, and it showed by winning the division.
All right. Joe Reedy, again, who covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer, joining us here inside the Patriots Playbook. We asked about the relationship between Chad and Terrell Owens yesterday and how they were getting along. What's your impression of at least the initial stage of this friendship and or partnership out on the football field?
I think the friendship's going very well. I think Chad has rubbed off in Terrell in the fact to enjoy football and enjoy playing a lot more, especially considering Terrell's in his 14th or 15th season in the league, and he knows that, you know, the years are drawn to a close. I think Terrell has shown Chad as a receiver how to run more exact routes, how to be there when the quarterback expects it, not to freelance too often, how to basically be a more complete and polished receiver. And in practice, both of them are pushing each other. But, you know, Terrell's admitted during the preseason, you know, this ain't going to be a bed of roses. It ain't going to be all peaches and cream at times. And that'll be interesting now when the first rough patch of the season occurs and this offense struggles, because let's face it, every offense struggles. Just how things go after that, and how Carson Palmer is probably the ultimate mediator and referee is going to be able to keep this all together.
How much different has this Bengals offense looked to you in these first five preseason games that they've had?
A lot crisper, a lot that stuff that they want to do, they can finally do. I was especially encouraged the last 2 weeks. They ran a lot of no-huddle, which they hadn't since 2006, 2007, and were able to move it down the field very well. A lot of three wide receiver sets with Chad Terrell and Jordan Shipley. Jermaine Gresham's added a lot to this offense. Carson's done a good ball distributing the ball to everyone, and Cedric Benson's getting yards, too, when he's run the ball. So it's been a lot more balanced, which, let's face it, this offense needed, especially last year in the second half of the year after Chris Henry got hurt. They lost a deep threat, and the passing game was two-dimensional, and by the time you shut Caldwell and Ocho Cinco down, that was it. They had no passing game to speak of.
Well, speaking of that passing game and getting back to the whole relationship now between Ocho Cinco and T.O., somebody asked me earlier this week, you know, how would you pick your poison here? Who would you double down on? What do the guys themselves say, you know, when somebody gets the other attention? I'm guessing that whoever's the recipient of single coverage is going to have to be licking his lips.
Yeah, because I don't think you can double down either of them.
No.
And I also think if you aggressively and consistently play cover two on this offense now, you're going to be able to run it with Cedric Benson. So it's a matter of picking your poison either way. Turk Schoenert, who was the offensive coordinator of Buffalo last year, brought up a great point after this signing. He said, you know, the most dangerous balanced offense in the league last year was New Orleans, because they could run it at times and get the yards, and, you know, they had a bunch of receivers that were able to get the ball and distribute it. I think the biggest key to this offense and this passing game, though, is the move that they made in April with the drafting of Jermaine Gresham. They've never had a tight end like this for Carson in this offense, a big target that can stretch the ball in the middle of the field and be a big target in the red zone too. So you got to pay attention to him, got to pay attention to Shipley. That, you know, you can't really double, because one of these guys is going to hurt you. And, you know, Benson's pretty good catching the ball out of the backfield also. So there's about five weapons in the passing game there.
Yeah, it all kind of stacks up, I think, pretty well for Cincinnati. Joe, if you could pick a part of this football team that you feel like could surprise, that maybe fans, especially outside of Southern Ohio, wouldn't know about this team, what could Patriots fans in particular look for out of Cincinnati on Sunday that they just might not be aware of right now? What would you say might jump up and surprise them?
I would say their pass rush. That's been the one area that Mike Zimmer has stressed since basically this day after the season ended against the Jets. They need to upgrade it a lot more, and they have. Antoine Odom's back from his Achilles injury at 8 sacks in the first 3 games. Robert Gethers looks like he's finally healthy. Geno Atkins, a 4th-round pick, had 4.5 sacks in the preseason, so he could be in some nickel situations and be pretty well. And I think that the linebackers, this is a big year for them. Raymond Luga had his off-the-field problems. Keith Rivers and Dahani Jones and Ray also, they were good in terms of large numbers of tackles, but there really weren't those wow or physical hits that you normally associate with the linebacking core. And that's the one thing now, that they really want to be physical and get after guys and deliver those highlight-type hits.
Mm-hmm. Joe, you said earlier about the Bengals offense having that Gresham as that dimension that Palmer had been lacking. It's sort of similar with the Patriots offense, where they have 2 rookie tight ends who are adding a dimension to the offense for Tom Brady that he hasn't had in a while. So there are a little bit of similarity in that regard, and the fact that they have 2 all-star wide receivers in Moss and Welker, whereas you guys have T.O. and Ocho Cinco. So I think the offenses kind of match up pretty well, just on paper, tail of the tape against one another. It looks to me on paper, though, like the Bengals' defense has the edge significantly over New England's defense, and I think that's where the game is going to be won or lost. What's your thought on that?
That would be the area I would say, too, because, I mean, you guys got two green cornerbacks in Darius Butler and Devin McCourty, and you know, they're going to test them early and often, and how they withstand pressure under fire is going to be a big part in what they do. I think the key for the Bengals on defense is they're going to have to get a pass rush. They're going to have to be able to pressure and get after Brady, because he has the quick release, and there's been that solid offensive line behind him. Now, how it translates with Mankins and Kazer, Mankins is definitely out. Kazer, depending on what he does, you know, there might be some ability to exploit it there, but that's still a very stout offensive line. If they can get pressure going, I think the Bengals will be in pretty decent shape. If they can't get pressure at all, then, you know, Brady, with the room to operate and everything, it could be a long day.
Other than just, the normal pressure to win, is there any extra pressure put on this team to perform well early in the season, given the, I guess, personalities that are involved in this franchise? And by the way, a name that I haven't brought up that's been sort of quiet since he's, relatively speaking, since he's been in Cincinnati, is a guy like Pac-Man Jones defensively, who seems to be kind of falling in line. And maybe you can shed some light on that as well.
Yeah, I think not only is a nickel corner he's done very well, but in the return game, he could be a real X factor. He'll be returning punts on Sunday and probably will be back there for kicks. And, I mean, the Bengals got depth in terms of returners on special teams that most teams would be very envious of. On kicks, you got Bernard Scott, who almost led the league, or would have, but he didn't qualify for the minimum, averaged close to 30 yards a kick last year. You got Adam Jones now, who was very good with Tennessee. You got Jordan Shipley, Quan Cosby, and then you translate those four on punts, and you know, you got some dangerous explosive type guys there. But Adam is bought into the system. Still some technique stuff he's got to work on here and there, but as far as everything and how he's dealt with everything so far, he's been fine.
Well, I think it's a great way to start the season. I know the Patriots wish they probably weren't starting off with such a stout team, but nevertheless, I think Cincinnati comes in and poses quite the threat, I think, to New England here in the early going as these teams get underway. Joe Reedy covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Joe, thanks for spending a little time with us today. We sure appreciate it, and safe travels this way.
No problem. See you guys on Sunday.
Yep,
thanks,
you got
it. Will do. All right, so there you go. You got the inside story from the Cincinnati perspective as Joe covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can get his stuff at Cincinnati.com where you can get most of the Inquirer stuff there. You know, I think it's kind of interesting that at least he mentioned for now, Eric, that things seem to be okay, but that first sign of adversity is usually a great test of what a team's character is like. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that Ocho Cinco has been a guy that, you know, has been outspoken when things have gone bad in the past in Cincinnati, and I think it's probably largely due to a lot of frustration more than anything else. Mm-hmm. He seems to be a guy that really puts it out on the line. T.O., he, you know, we know what his track record is. He doesn't really have a track record like Chad Ochocinco, where that particular instance is concerned. He kind of whines just to whine, or if the ball's not coming his way, so to speak, or what have you. Now, he didn't do that last year in Buffalo. For all practical purposes, I think he seemed to be fairly model citizen last year in Buffalo.
I think because he was resigned to the fact that he was in Buffalo and they weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, and then this Cincinnati team.
When he was in San Francisco, he expected to win. When he was in Dallas, he expected to win. When he was in Philly, he expected to win.
And last year, he knew he wasn't going to win, and
I'll just collect my paycheck and
I'm out. Here, though, it's a different
thing. I think he expects to win here.
Yes, and I think Cincinnati should. I think fans of the Bengals should expect to win based on the team they have on the field.
Yeah.
I happen to think that their defense is going to surprise a lot of people, and I think you hit the nail on the head, and Joe agreed. I think that'll be the difference in Sunday's game. I think Cincinnati's defense will probably be able to stop New England a little bit more than New England will be able to stop Cincinnati. Mm. Now, I haven't given you my pick yet. I know you guys did picks just half an hour or so ago, and I will give you my score selection shortly. But I have to admit, I am leaning that direction as much as it pains me to say that, because I just kind of looked at it matter-of-factly here. I think both teams will struggle at times simply because it is week one. And I don't think you'd expect, you know, perfect spit and polish to be going for week one. You know, somebody's going to have to step up and make a play. Mm-hmm. And you hope that it's the Patriots defense that can force a turnover. Or, you got one of these young defensive backs that, you know, and I banged on Darius Butler. And I've had several people email me both on and off the air since then about, how come you're so down on Darius Butler? I'm going to stay down onto him until I see something from him. That's all. I will change my tune when I see Darius Butler step up and make a play. I want to see him get beat on a play by receiver and then have recoverability. I haven't seen that, and good corners can do that. Haven't seen that yet from him. That's my only issue. Maybe that's something he can develop. But I got to tell you, having both him and McCourty, as you guys and we just talked about here, having him and McCourty going up against Ochocinco and Terrell Owens scares the bejesus out of me for Sunday, if I'm looking at it strictly from a won and loss perspective.
Right, and you're the only hope you can have, well, not the only hope, I shouldn't say that, but the best hope you can have is that they don't embarrass themselves. And then you can at least look and say,
"I want to see them. I want to see them battle.
This is about as good as they're going to face all year as a tandem."
There you go. And I think we'll be able to tell a lot more now. It might not be a total success this weekend, but if we see something during the game that indicates that these guys are learning on the job, I think we can all feel like, okay, maybe this has an opportunity to be successful if these guys stay healthy. But if you know, Ochocinco is continually a yard to a yard and a half ahead of him, you know, when he's breaking routes and getting into the open and he's playing catch-up, you want to see him step for step with the receiver. You know, as best as you possibly can be. Mm-hmm. And these are salty, savvy, all-pro caliber, heck, maybe Hall of Fame caliber receivers, you know, that are on the field for Cincinnati as opposed to two guys who are, you know, barely out of diapers, you know, from a professional perspective. That's what should concern Patriots fans, and whether or not the Patriots defense can put any kind of pressure on Carson Palmer. Oh, and by the way, yeah, you got Cedric Benson, who's going to be playing with a huge chip on his shoulder as well, running the football. And frankly, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Running the football might be one of the bigger issues that's left unsaid right now in terms of the Patriots defense being able to stop that run. There are so many question marks that, quite frankly, I'm very nervous about this game on Sunday.
I have a question for you, John.
Shoot.
What is Chris Berman doing with this mustache?
I don't know, but that's really ugly.
And it's not a fake, right? That looks like
that looks
like a real mustache.
That looks kind of like what does that mustache remind me of? That reminds me of who's the guy that played first base for the Yankees? Help me, not with the Yankees anymore.
Oh, Giambi.
Yeah, Jason, that looks Giambi. Like Jason Giambi's mustache.
The porn star stash?
Yeah, the porn star stash.
The flavor saver?
Yeah. I mean, my stash isn't great, but frankly, mine looks a lot better
than
yours.
You don't have a stash, you have a goatee.
Well, I do, yeah. But that's why I grew the goatee part, because I never have liked how just a mustache looked on my face.
It doesn't look good on most people's faces.
Were you commenting on my beard? You were making fun of me yesterday for a beard or something?
Wasn't making funny. I was asking if you were doing that.
Yours looks fine.
No, because some people shave the edges when they're growing just the scruff. They want to make it like a clean scruff. I don't know if you were doing that or actually growing a full beard.
I'm
trying to grow a beard.
I actually like, close cropped mustaches and short beards like, this. And if someone wants to do it full, that's fine too. Why do we get off on this? Oh, because you brought up Berman.
Berman was
got
on
a very cheesy
on the TV
mustache
screen here, and it's I don't understand what he's doing.
It's cheesy. I just don't think mustaches on TV look good. Period. And if I were still doing TV regularly, I probably wouldn't have this. I just don't think they look good.
I agree.
Plus, it adds quite a bit of gray, so.
That's a distinguished look, John.
Thank you very much. Well, that's right. That's very good look.
You're 25 years announcing for the Patriots. Oh, speaking of which, I'm doing a feature for the next issue, not this, for a couple of issues down the road.
Yes.
On Algie Crumpler.
Yes.
And was talking to him about his unique first name. Which is Algernon. His full name is Algernon.
Right.
Named after the book Flowers for Algernon.
I was about to say Flowers for Algernon, right? Yeah.
It was about a mouse and mentally challenged person.
Yes.
And so we got to talking about that and the uniqueness of his name and how there aren't that many Algernons in the world. And he said when he was in Atlanta, because I asked him, do most people know that your name is Algernon, your full name is Algernon, not Algie? And he said, no, I don't think most people do. He said, but in Atlanta, whenever I scored a touchdown, the PA announcer would yell out my first name.
Algernon.
Algernon. And he would scream it. And he said, I kind of like that. I didn't tell him I knew you. But
so
if he scores,
you want me to say
scores,
Algernon?
I want you to scream out Algernon. Sounds
touchdown
like a superhero.
Out by
thing,
Algernon, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
right,
do that, and he'll get a little a pleasant surprise out of it.
I can do that. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And everybody will look at me like, what?
What the hell are you doing?
What are you doing? I'll say that was a request from Mr. Crumpler.
An indirect request.
An indirect request from Mr. Crumpler.
I sort of read between the lines.
I like it. I mean? He liked it in Atlanta. Worked for him.
He loved it in Atlanta.
If it brought him luck, and then, if he scores here, he gets an Algernon.
And, he made 4 straight Pro Bowls when he was in Atlanta.
Hey, that's not bad. That's why I thought the pickup was good. All right, let's sneak in a timeout here. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the phone number. You can also Facebook us here. Facebook chat is going. Twitter at jrooko722. Our question of the day on Thursday is usually predict the game. That's usually what we ask for. So if you have not had your chance to have your 2 cents worth, who do you think is going to win? What will the score be? Fire off an email, fire off a Facebook chat, and we will share those. If you have your breakdown of the game where you think the game will be won or lost by either side, please include as well, and we will be sharing those emails. Anything else of a concern, any other questions coming up, now's the time to get them aboard. If you have questions for Russell Baxter from ESPN coming up in the next hour, we'll take those as well, right here inside the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness.
Welcome back inside the Playbook for a Thursday. Game week one for the Patriots against the Cincinnati Bengals. It is the 22nd meeting all time between the Patriots and Bengals on Sunday. Patriots lead the series 13-8 for Cincinnati. In fact, the Patriots have won 6 of the last 7 meetings between the two teams. Last time the two teams met was October 1 of 2007. Patriots won going away 34-13 that day. Last Bengals win was way back in 2001, 23-17.
That was week one, wasn't it?
That was week one. It was September 9th. Yeah, it was the opener. And they lost. I remember that game was on the road.
It was on the road.
I remember Drew Bledsoe, the quarterback, that day, and it was just not a good day.
Terrible game for the Patriots. Yeah.
Obviously, that season turned out well. We made the analogy yesterday. John Rook and Eric Scalavino from PFW
you were
here.
Horrible.
Back again. Yeah, he was kind of horrible that day. But we made the analogy yesterday that team in 2001 started out 1-3, and won the Super Bowl. We were talking about starts for this team, and I made the statement, and I'm still going to stand by it. that if this team starts out 1-3 before the bye week, that not only will they not make the Super Bowl, I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
I think I agree with that.
2-2, I think, you know, they're right in there. And I think, frankly, we should all be thrilled if they can get to 2-2 before the week off, considering the way the schedule's starting with the road games that they have and even the home games that they have, you know?
I'd take 2-2 with
absolutely
the schedule.
Right now, if you could give me 2-2, let's mail it in and let's go right to the bye week, you know? Mm. I'd take it and let's move on. You know, I think that's the way I feel. I don't know how you feel about it, but certainly a topic of conversation here. In addition to predict the game, tell us what you think. Eric says it's Cincinnati this weekend.
Yeah. High-scoring affair, John.
High-scoring?
In the 30s.
Yeah, I think
teams.
So, too. I think it will be. But based on what we were just talking about with Joe Reedy from the Inquirer, I'd say right now I'm favoring the Bengals, and I'm going to say the spread is Patriots by 4.5.
Yeah.
I think the Patriots will
because they're at home.
Because they're at home, I think the Patriots, you know, will. In other words, I think the Bengals will cover the 4.5, and I'm gonna not only cover the 4.5, but I think that they'll win outright. I'm gonna say Bengals 31, Patriots 30. That's just my thought. I think the Patriots will have an opportunity. I think the Patriots will be in the game. I just have a sense that when the Patriots need to make a play or the Bengals need to make a stop, that they'll be able to do so, and when the Patriots need to make a stop, they won't.
They won't be able to.
They won't be able to do it.
I think an interesting number two will be the third down efficiency of the Bengals.
Oh.
Can the Patriots defense get off the field?
I think that's a great point, Kevin.
Well,
I just think, you know, the Patriots' third down efficiency defense will probably be one of the worst marks in the league. I don't know if it'll improve as the year goes by, but certainly early in the year, I'm looking at teams going, you know, 7-for-12, 8-for-12 on third down, and you just can't win in the NFL when you allow teams to convert more than half of their opportunities on third down.
Well, here's the problem I have with that analysis. You're assuming that teams are going to get to third down against this defense. I think they're going to be picking up first downs by the bunches on first and second down. In other words, I think they're going to be getting big plays against this opposing offenses will be able to get 12, 14, 18-yard plays on first and second down, thereby not needing to get to third down in order to put the Patriots defense in a situation where they could make themselves get off the field.
Right.
I think it's just going to, like you said with Butler, your Butler was your microcosm for my greater point, which is I need to see this defense do something and make some plays before I'm, you know, willing to say that they're going to be a capable enough unit to help this team get to the playoffs.
I kind of think so, too. By the way, just as an aside, I know you guys do weekly picks and you keep track of your records around the league and all that stuff in PFW every week.
Yep.
Last year, the Patriots finished 10-6, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Picking the Patriots games last year, I was 13-3.
Really?
So I only missed on 3 opportunities out of 16 weeks where the Patriots were concerned, which means I did pick them to lose, and they actually lost last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked the Patriots games correctly 13 out of 16 last year, which I thought was decent.
Decent? That's great.
And so I'm picking them to lose in week one. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I can still be a fan here. You know, it makes our job a heck of a lot easier to cover the team when they're winning and everybody's upbeat about the team, but I just don't have a good feeling about the first week.
Yeah, I don't either. I have...
Maybe some of your pessimism is rubbing off on me, Scalavino.
It's not pessimism, John. It's realism.
Okay. Well, some
you
would
can
say
be, you can be a fan.
Some
you can
would
be
say
objective.
It's pessimism.
You
some,
can be a fan and be objective.
I'm trying to do that here.
You were at 82% last year. That's very good.
Is that 82%, 13
good.
Out of 16?
That's very good.
That's pretty good, I thought. Picking the Patriots games? Yeah.
I'm not trying to suck up either.
Well, I would very much...
That's what you're known for, Kevin.
I would very much like to go 0-1. Does that make sense? Yeah, I would
that
like
makes
to...
sense.
I would like to go... I'd like to be batting 0.
I'd like you to, considering it's my first game with the organization.
Yeah, I know. It would be kind of tough to get off on the wrong foot here. It's all going to be Kevin Collins' fault. You know, new blood in, bad karma. Keith Jackson sent me, not the Keith Jackson.
Oh, whoa,
but, no. Whoa, Nelly.
One of my Facebook friends here sent me this... Facebook chat comment here. I told him that I would share on the air because he's not able to listen live today. But he says, I wonder if we could comment about the relative strengths of the teams in the AFC East. We'd all like the Pats to be in the postseason, but they need to be at least a wild card, obviously, in order to do that. It seems to me that Miami has their heads down improving their team. I guess he means putting the blinders on and just moving forward. The Jets are talented but undisciplined, so could be either great or they could be terrible. Can the Bills stay awful forever?
Not forever, but
he says he sees Miami winning the division, and the Pats or the Jets in second place. Frankly, I share your sentiments, Keith. I actually also see Miami winning the division, but I think the Patriots.
Do you really?
I do. I think the Patriots at 9-7 could be right there for the wild card.
9-7 might win the division.
So your pick, John, is 9-7 for the year for the Pats?
Yes.
Okay.
9-7.
That might be good enough to win the division.
I've got the Dolphins. I've got the Dolphins at 10-6.
Man, I just don't see that.
I've just glanced at it. I just think Miami's just not getting the run. All the run happens to be with the Jets, and I'm just not sold on the Jets right now. So,
but have you heard all this Chad Henne talk all offseason about how great he is, the second coming of Dan Marino and all this stuff?
Some of it.
I don't understand where it's coming from.
Well, I think he's pretty good. He was good.
Pretty good. He's not the next coming of Dan Marino.
No, but he didn't have to be. I just think that, I think the Dolphins are going to sneak up on people. And I think 10 wins is definitely going to win the division.
He's definitely serviceable and an evolving player.
I totally agree. Frankly, I think the best move they made was dumping Ted Ginn, but... You know
what a waste of a first round pick that was. Yeah. Ted Ginn and Tonic.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. So anyway, I think the Fins at 10-6. I think the Patriots and maybe the Jets at 9-7. One or the other will probably struggle at 9-7. Probably be more like 8-8. But that's just my thoughts there in terms of the AFC East overall. And so. I told Keith I'd give him a little prediction, and there you go. There's a prediction.
All right.
What do you think about the division? You think the Jets will win it?
I do. I have my picks here, actually, from our latest issue. I have the Jets winning the division.
At 10-6?
We don't ascribe a number to it in here, I think they will. I think New England, New York, and Miami are going to be in that mix all season because I think that the division itself is going to be rather mediocre as a whole.
Okay.
So I think 9-7 will clearly, or 10-6 will clearly win the division, whoever gets to that mark, if anyone does. 9-7 more likely will win it. I think it's possible that 8-8 could win the division.
Eight and eight.
I think it's
win
possible.
The division.
It's like the NFC West was a couple of years ago when I think it was the Cardinals were 8-8 and they won.
Well, you know what?
They went to the Super Bowl.
Right. Hey, if they go 8-8 and win the division, wow.
And that Cardinals team got beat by like 40 here in Foxborough.
Yeah,
that year.
In that snow game. Yeah. I think that has the AFC East has that type of potential kind of division.
If that actually happened, think about to the Castle team that went 11-5 and couldn't get in.
I know.
How about that?
I know.
That's really bizarre over a 2-year period. If they could go 8-8 and win the division.
I know.
And go 11-5 2 years ago and not even get the playoffs. Mary Beth just chatted. I'm a longtime Pats fan, first season listener, loving the show. She says Pats 24, Cincy 21 is my prediction. 24-21.
Okay.
From
her I'll take that
keyboard
result.
From her keyboard to God's ears, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if you're a Patriots
fan.
We'll take that result.
Absolutely. You have to kind of like that result overall. Although I just tend to think that this is going to be a little higher scoring than that just because of the relative offenses of the two teams. You know, I think the Patriots have a chance. I heard them talking about this on EEI the other day. In fact, it also, I think they brought it up again today. But I think the Patriots have a chance to approach numbers that they had in 2007 if everybody stays healthy. I have a chance. I don't think Brady's going to throw 50 touchdowns, but I think he has
a chance to throw 30.
I was going to say 35. I think he's got a chance to be in that vicinity.
Well, that's what he threw in he threw 50. What am I saying?
Yeah, he threw 50. He threw, 28, 29
last year?
He
threw 28 last year.
28. So I think he's got a chance to throw
30 to 35 is probably right.
And if he does that, then I think this team, you know, can score – 24, 25, 26 points a game on average. The problem is, how much is the defense going to give up? Are they going to be a defense that's going to give up 20, 21 points a game? If they do, then you're going to find the Patriots probably 9-7 or 8-8. If the Patriots defense can even be close to where they've been, over the last few years, which is in that 17 to 19 point range per game. Believe it or not, it sounds crazy. It's only a point or two difference. It means everything in the overall scheme of things as far as a 16-game schedule is concerned.
Right. But here's the thing. If one or two injuries crop up at, say, the linebacker position.
Right.
They have nothing behind them, John. They have nobody to step up in that. I mean, nobody's proven so far that they can step up into that spot and make any plays with consistency.
Not yet.
So if there's, I was even thinking about this with Brady this morning before I had all the facts on the story of what happened. But if Brady's accident today were more serious and he weren't going to be able to play this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
You only have Brian Hoyer on the active roster and no potential backups or other options at quarterback, either on the active roster or on the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. They would have had to scramble today to try to find a quarterback just to be a backup quarterback for Brian Hoyer on Sunday if things were worse with Brady. They're not, obviously, but they only have two actual quarterbacks. Now, last year they went through the whole year with two quarterbacks, but they had Isaiah Stanbeck bounce between the practice squad and the active roster as a wide receiver slash quarterback because he'd played both positions. And then later they had signed Jeff Rowe as a practice squad quarterback. So they always had a third quarterback available.
By the
they
way,
don't even have a third quarterback available.
Yeah,
right
by the
now.
Way, Zach Robinson was picked up by Seattle, right?
Yeah, I believe by their practice squad.
Practice squad,
so,
right?
Theoretically, they could have signed him off of that practice squad and put him on the active roster.
They still could if they needed to.
If they needed to,
yeah. They still could, as long as he's on that practice squad, which is where Seattle put him. Let's see if we can bang out a couple of emails here before we get to the top of the hour. Max in Concord, New Hampshire says, I really like the pickup of Jared Page to shore up the safety position, but really dislike the Tracy White addition. Is he really that amazing at special teams to replace someone like Sergio Brown? Seems to me Brown is fast, hard hitter, could contribute on special teams. He nearly had a punt blocked in preseason and get some limited reps at DB or safety. Brown seems like a playmaker, and isn't that what's needed on the Pats defense, rather than three guys standing in zone areas watching long receptions? What do you think?
Well, I didn't know who Tracy White was until we traded for
him.
But
yeah, I wasn't familiar with the name either, to be
honest.
If he's
a special teamer, I mean, I think we have enough guys on this team who are special teams specialists. I think we need more playmakers, John. I'm not looking for special teamers at this point. I'm looking for playmakers, especially on defense.
Is that why maybe guys like Sam Aiken did not come back and guys like Matt Slater stayed with the team? Because their ability to make a big play?
Well,
in theory?
Well, in theory, Sam Aiken has made more big plays over the past couple of years.
In practicality is what I was going to say. He has because he's had the opportunity. Slater was obviously hurt.
Right.
Especially in the receiving game. Sam Aiken had a couple long.
That's the one roster move. I mean, Derek Burgess, I can understand. Cutting Sam Aiken, I didn't get.
I didn't get it either. Especially if you're going to keep Matthew Slater over him.
That I really didn't get.
If you're going to get rid of both of them, okay, fine.
With all due respect to Matthew Slater, by the way. But
right.
I don't think he's not a bad kid. He's not a bad player.
No.
I just thought Sam Aiken. I thought that Sam Aiken had earned the opportunity to be there.
But Slater. Great guy, but he's a man without a position. He's been listed. This was the same at UCLA. He was on offense. They moved him to defense. They made him a special teamer. That's where he found his niche. He came to New England. He was listed as a wide receiver, but he was practicing with the defensive backs.
Right,
then
right.
They list him as a defensive back. He's practicing with the wide receivers. He makes his name on special. He's a man without a position. Really.
Yeah. Totally.
So maybe they're looking at it as he's a man for every position.
Well, he's
going to
have to.
Because he can play all of those things.
He will
things.
Be playing on special teams. You expect to see Slater out
but
there.
But looking at it from your perspective, Eric, it is kind of a backwards move if you're looking for an actual playmaker.
Yeah, because if you have a couple of injuries at wide receiver and all of a sudden your depth is low,
exactly.
You know Sam Aiken can make plays in the passing game. Hmm. You know he can catch.
Has he been picked up by anybody?
I don't know.
I haven't seen it. One more here. This one comes from Ken in New Mexico, who says, the Bengals game really does seem like a great bellwether game for how 2010-11 will look for the Patriots. Given such, give me your opinion, wins and losses or general season results, if A, the Patriots are blown out by the Bengals and our lack of pass rush is exposed. You want to try that one first?
Sure. I think worst-case scenario for this team this year is 7-9.
Okay.
And I think getting destroyed by the Bengals in week one is a cause for worst-case scenario thinking.
B, the game is tight with either team winning. How does that help them in the long run?
Not a whole lot.
Okay,
because I think you're going to see a lot of that all year.
The Patriots beat the Bengals decisively, and the defense shows up.
That would be a surprise, be a pleasant surprise, and I think that gives young guys like McCourty and Butler – if they show up in that game and make plays, gives them the confidence going forward. And I think that helps them get to 9-7.
Big swing game. I think if the Patriots can look impressive, somehow beating the Bengals, I'd say 10 wins is a definite possibility. That's how I feel.
That's a ceiling, though. I don't see any more than that.
I think 11 would be the ceiling. I'm willing to give them 11. I realize the schedule's probably too tough for that.
I'll concede as much as 10 wins.
Okay.
On the best case side. But they would have to do a lot between now and then.
This is a good email by Kenny. He says, Ocho Cinco and Darius Butler have apparently been tweeting back and forth. At the end, Ocho has mentioned that Butler's a very good corner. I'm tempted to put that on, well, every player will try to show respect to other players, but in your opinions, does Butler have some potential to be better than average? I obviously do not think so.
I do think so. I had him, when we did our ranking the roster, I did that a couple of issues ago, and I had him ranked ninth in part because of his potential. I think, and plus,
I'd have to say all on his potential.
Well, all no, not just that, but I mean, he's at a position that warrants that type of respect because he was drafted to be one of those shutdown corner types. Okay. He hasn't shown it yet.
Yeah.
So if you have a guy who's a shutdown corner type, an Asante Samuel, a Ty Law, guys that we've had here in the past, those guys are top 10 ranked players on your team, in my opinion. And I think he had the potential to be that. He still has the potential to be that. He hasn't shown it yet. You're right. But based on that, and based on who else they have on the roster at this point, that's why I ranked him as high as I did.
Ken finally says, give us your three most important points for the Patriots to win this game. What do they have to do in order to pull it out? 3 points.
Well, John, obviously the key is they have to score more points than the Bengals.
That's one. That's the
It's always
one.
A key.
That's the
It's always
one.
A key to winning games. No, seriously, they have to hold the ball on offense and prevent the Bengals from getting the ball. They have to have long sustained drives. In 2007, they scored a lot of points in short drives, you know, minute or less, because they had big plays. They're going to need to work that offense and drain some clock so that the Bengals offense doesn't have time to get on the field and rip up the Patriots defense.
Okay.
So that's 1 point. They need to do something. Butler or McCourty has to do something to shut down either or both of those wide receivers, Owens or Ocho Cinco.
Agreed.
And somebody has to step up and either disrupt the running game or get in Palmer's face and disrupt the passing game from a pass rushing standpoint, or just, you know, that front seven has to hold up.
Right.
They can't do what they did against Baltimore.
All right. Very good. Thanks for chipping in, as always.
No problem.
We'll see you here on Sunday.
We'll be here Sunday, and we'll talk about it on Wednesday when I get back with you.
Absolutely. Sounds like a plan. All right, Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. We'll take a timeout here. On the other side, Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, joined us in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook well underway. I'm John Rook. Game week one for the Pats and the Bengals coming up on Sunday at 1 p.m. here at Gillette Stadium, the home opener, the season opener. We mentioned the Patriots yesterday, 8-0 all-time in season home openers here at Gillette Stadium since they opened up in 2002. And there's every opportunity, I think, for them to, you know, to make that a perfect 9-0, but it's going to be more difficult, I think, than most probably realize. Our friend Howard in Stratford, Connecticut, says here, Pats 45, Bengals 42. Patriots O finds a way to win the game, and the Bungles D finds a way to lose. A Tiger doesn't change its stripes. The Bungles are the Bungles for a reason, and will always be so long as Marvin Lewis is the head coach. Wow. It's kind of harsh. I mean, I can't necessarily disagree. I just think it's harsh. We gave him plenty of plaudits in the last hour with Joe Reedy from the Cincinnati Inquirer, and you know, he seems to be kind of turning things around in that direction, but wow. That's okay. His opinion. You are welcome to yours as well. You can send us your game predictions, webradio at patriots.com or Facebook chat. It is my pleasure at this time to welcome back inside Patriots Playbook Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN and the entire networks of the worldwide leader. My friend, it is good to visit with you again. It must mean it's football season.
You too, John. I hope you've been well and so on. Thanks for the nice introduction. Per usual, once again, the mail system didn't fail me, and you got the check.
Yes. And yeah. Did you get yours?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good. Yes. That's always good to hear. What are your thoughts, at least initially, on you know, the news or the scare that that we got around here, say, about 6 or so hours ago?
Yeah, and it seemed like it was more a scare more than anything else. Obviously, from what I've read, Tom's been on the practice field and all that. But obviously, when you hear, you know, when you hear a car accident, regardless, no such thing. I guess there is a minor car accident, but you never know what can happen. Well, and so on.
When you look at the vehicles, the car that was plowed into by Tom got smashed up pretty good.
Well, you know, and I'm going to draw a bad analogy here and stuff like this, so bear with me for a second.
Sure, sure.
You know, I don't know that much about NASCAR, to say the least, but here's what you get frightened of, though. When you see how many of us watching TV and watching sports and stuff have seen these horrific car crashes in NASCAR where the car goes belly up and flips over about 15 times,
mm-hmm.
and the guy walks away.
Yeah, right.
And then you see, you know, God bless this old Dale Earnhardt, look like he rubbed against the wall.
Yeah.
And he wound up you know, dying and stuff. So you don't know. Yeah. I mean, you just don't know and stuff. And as soon as you hear the word car accident, obviously there's an immediate moment of fear that juts through you. And so as I'm sure, and nobody was fearful more than when Tom was suddenly struck.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
And
I remember that Earnhardt Day very well because I was on the air on ESPN Radio, and I had to break the news that he died.
Right. I mean, but listen.
That was tough. We couldn't believe it looking at the video that we saw.
Couldn't believe it. Compared to what you've seen before, where you guys see guys literally walk away from, something that looks like out of a Burt Reynolds Hooper movie.
That's right, yeah.
And so on. And yet it looks like, oh, he just scraped the wall. He's rubbing the wall.
Yeah.
And again, God bless his soul, he wound up dying. I mean, that just, you don't know, so.
Well, I am very, very happy that it's football season. And obviously, I know everybody else is as well. I know that, you know, your job is the NFL 365 days a year there at ESPN. But I'm sure that you anticipate the season as much, if not more so, than anybody.
Oh, no doubt, and it's even more fun when it's a leap year because then it's
366. That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, I have told people many a time, when I lose that kid in the candy store mentality that I have at this time of year and so on, then I'll be doing something else. But I haven't lost it yet, and tonight will be exciting.
Yeah.
And getting around here, getting around here on Sunday as we get ready for Sunday countdown and getting ready to sit down and watch the games with Boomer and Tommy and the rest of our gang and so on. It'll be a wild ride, and I think it's going to be if my predictions are the way they are, it's going to be a wildly unpredictable season.
I would tend to agree. Now, for the uninitiated, if you're new to the program this year, Russell joins us on Thursdays. We usually pick, five or six games around the league that could have significant importance, not only around the NFL, but that could also affect the Patriots, either in the present or in the future tense. We also try to include some AFC East Division games and upcoming opponents for the Patriots when we look at, those half dozen or so games every Thursday around the league, and we also hit the national games as well. Before we get to the week one slate, I've got two things to ask you from the offseason.
Sure.
Your thoughts on. Number one, are we ready to move on from four preseason games in your estimation? Aren't we ready for 18 regular season games?
Yeah, I think we are. And I know people are freaking out about this in some regards and so on. But we're not going to a 24 or 22 block, okay? It was 12 games. And then it's gone from 14. And then it's gone from 16. And now they want to do 18. The league is different. They train all year round. There are, I joke about this, mini camps, maxi camps, rookie camps, Vanda camps. I mean, there are more camps. There are OTAs. It is a full-time gig. You are not playing professional football now and then getting a job somewhere.
Yeah.
It is a full-time job, which is also why this is also why the players are more accountable responsibly.
Right.
Than they've been in past years and so on. That's why you're going to see the start of the season, 14 guys who have been suspended, who are not playing at least week one, going up to week four, up to Johnny Jolly, who's suspended for the year. So it's a full-time job. I think the rosters will be expanded. The practice squads will look different. The preseason games will play more regulars, getting ready for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe they play two preseason games and take a week off before the season starts. It's going to happen. I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen
You think it'll be a part of the new CBA if and when?
Has to be part of the new CBA.
Yeah.
I think, and I just think it's going to happen. And let me just throw things out here. I'm not sitting there, I'm cheering for 18-game season. I just feel, we've gone for a 16-game season for over 30 years. That's, I believe, the longest stint that a season has not expanded.
That's right.
Okay? Yeah. We had a 14-game season from, 61 to 77. It was about 16 years.
Right.
Okay? We've gone to the 16-game season, barring the two strikes, for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I think it's just evolving that way. Now, I'm just throwing these things out as far as professional football. The USFL, long gone, played 18-game regular season. The Canadian Football League, current,
18.
Plays an 18-game season.
Yeah, right.
Here's another thing that people don't necessarily remember. And again, I don't know the toll it eventually took on players. 1985, the USFL disbanded.
I was there, Russell. I'm still owed a check.
I think my friend Steve Young is owed about 37 of them.
Yeah, he's owed a little more than
40-year deal that he had.
Yeah.
So, and
yeah.
I don't even know. But
yeah.
Anyway, I'll give you just an example because I looked him up specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie White, the late great, played 31 football games that year. Played 18 in the USFL and another 13 in the NFL. He wasn't alone in doing that. And then my favorite example, and while he was obviously in the last year of his career and waning in his skills, does anybody know that Jerry Rice, Hall of Famer Jerry Rice, in his 20th season, played 17 games in 2004? Because after he left the Raiders, the Seahawks had not yet had their bye. So he played 6 with the Raiders and 11 with the Seahawks.
I didn't realize that.
It's an oddity.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, it's like in a similar way, but not really.
Yeah.
Don't you love when I come up with that?
That's what I love about you.
Now you hear, you know, in baseball, guys don't win 20 games anymore because nobody, not that many people pitch constantly,
yeah.
Complete
games. You don't get the starts, right.
Or what is it now between, pardon, 4 days rest between starts?
Generally speaking.
Okay. It didn't used to be that way when
no.
I was younger.
No.
You know, I could always remember looking at the box score in the newspaper when I was a kid and seeing Wilbur Wood, 23-20. It seemed like Wilbur Wood was always 23-20, which means, see, that's a lot of games.
Yeah, that's a lot of starts.
It was always double digits, and there would be maybe a 20 on one side and a 20 on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that probably came around because they played on 3 days rest.
Yeah.
Okay. Was baseball worse back then? No, it's just what you're used to. And I think it's just an evolving process, and I've probably gone a long way to answer your question, but I think it's going to happen. I think eventually it'll be accepted, and people will start griping and complaining that we don't have 20 games in the regular season.
That will be an eventuality. By the way,
yes.
Vandekamp is my favorite brand of pork and beans. So
there you go.
There you go.
I'm very partial to Vand.
Yeah, there you go.
So.
The other question I have before we look at the games is, can you ask Boomer to do something about that mustache?
Well, I saw my Swami the other day, and it was a tribute as we on Tuesday celebrated our 31st anniversary. Not me and Boomer.
Yes.
But the ESPN celebrated right. our 31st anniversary, and
right.
In the inevitable Swami mode, he decided to relive his days from local television when
1979, when he had a mustache. That's
there
right.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the man is always full of surprises, and as I can say, and you know, for Chris, I'll say this braggadociously on his behalf. Been a pretty big year for Mr. Chris Berman, who back in May got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Absolutely.
And last month in Canton, Ohio, was given a very prestigious award, the Pete Rozelle
mm-hmm.
Radio and Television Award, which you know, well deserved for his longstanding contribution to the National Football League.
No question. No question about it. Very few cover it like he does. Let's start then with tonight's game. We got to. It's the first game of the brand new season, and it's a great matchup. The Vikings playing at the Saints. You got, you know, the defending Super Bowl champs, obviously, in the home game. The Patriots have played this Thursday night Oprah a couple of times following the two of their Super Bowl wins. You know, the Vikings are a team that I think with Brett Favre back, certainly that people are going to be looking at just because Favre is a story, whether you like him or not. And the Vikings also happen to be a primary contender to surpass or get by the Saints in the NFC this year.
Well, listen, you know, a lot of people will tell you last year that Minnesota lost the game and New Orleans didn't.
In the NFC Championship, yeah.
Right, the five turnovers. And, you know, as I was talking to somebody the other day, you really go back to the series of events that happened at the end of that game in the regular season. And as much as we, you know, rag on Brett Favre for throwing an interception late in the game, which he has, you know, gotten into habit and two, and the championship games two of the last 3 years, where he did it obviously against the Giants as well. To me, the organization and the team, you know, organization is probably a strong word, but the team that day became unrattled during that whole 12-man on the field penalty
mm-hmm.
at the end of regulation, and it changed everything in the blink of an eye. They went from moving down the field to getting that penalty and letting that penalty affect them, I think, on the field and on the sidelines. And it just turned into disaster. But the whole day was full of moving the football and not capitalizing in opportunities and so on. Adrian Peterson had his problems. It wasn't just him. They had trouble all day hanging on to the football, and it eventually cost them. And, you know, the Saints very opportunistic all year. It highlighted their year. You know, a team that took away the ball 39 times in the regular season, which was up from 22 the previous year, and then 8 more times in the postseason. You know, big plays by Tracy Porter, Darren Sharper early in the year, Porter later in the year. And it, like you already said, it is going to be a big-time atmosphere tonight. It's been a long time since the defending Super Bowl champion lost its first game the following season. The last team to do it were the Denver Broncos. After they had won their back-to-back Super Bowls, they were without John Elway.
Huh.
So it's been a long time, and to me it's gotten even harder to defeat that Super Bowl champion, starting with the Thursday night, with what the league has done now.
Yeah, yeah.
John, I know you'll remember this, but, you know, quick education for some people who don't realize. The idea of starting the season on a Thursday night did not start with just the Super Bowl champion hosting the game. It was actually started in New York and the following year in Washington because of September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a big hit. The first year, I was at the Meadowlands. We used to do the game. It was the Giants and the 49ers. The year after that was the Jets and the Redskins. And that became such a big hit that the NFL decided to adopt the policy of starting it every year on Thursday, and came up with the formula that the defending Super Bowl champion would open its season at home. And it really started with the Patriots playing the Colts in what turned out to be a rematch of the 03 title game. And, of course, one of the great games of the Thursday night series, when Willie McGinnis sacked Peyton Manning late in the game and pushed him out of Mike Vanderjagt's field goal. Remember, Vanderjagt hadn't missed a field goal the previous season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, you know.
Yeah.
Wasn't long after that he wasn't even with the Colts anymore. But that's in 04 is when it started becoming the Super Bowl champions game and so on. And, again, it even goes back further than beating the champion. I think it's even harder, and I think it will continue to be hard tonight. I like the Saints.
I agree. I'll go right along with that. Yeah, good background knowledge there. I didn't realize that Denver was the last team to lose. That's pretty good. Yeah. Dolphins-Bills. We got an AFC East matchup. Obviously, the Bills are on the calendar. So are the Dolphins lying in wait within the next couple of weeks for the Patriots, who get to play, you know, the Bills here on the 26th and then go to the Dolphins on October 4th before their bye week. You know, I mentioned this earlier to Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. I just said, you know, nobody's really talked about the Dolphins, at least from our perspective this year, because so much focus has been on what the Jets have done and what the Jets are doing and what the Jets might do and the Jets this and the Jets that, and let's go eat a GD snack and all that stuff that's going on, you know, from Rex Ryan's perspective. I think the Dolphins right now are my pick to win the AFC East.
Well, obviously, you and I are on the same page when it comes to that. I also like the Miami Dolphins to win the AFC East this year. And, yes, there has been a lot. You would, based on the offseason, it's been a one-and-a-half team division, the AFC East. It's been Jets, and can they dethrone the Patriots? That's been really that's discussion in the AFC East. There hasn't been any talk of Buffalo, and maybe with good reason, because they seem to be down on hard times once again.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami, which won the division just 2 years ago, and people forget, who made a big splash in the offseason with a big trade for Brandon Marshall and a big free agency signing in Carlos Dansby. And, you know, teams who go out and spend a lot of money and or make a lot of wholesale changes often scare me. But when you make one or two changes to tweak your team, Those are the teams to keep an eye on, and that's one of the reasons I like the Dolphins. They're pretty solid along the fronts. They have some questions in their secondary. They had some young corners got a lot of playing time last year and so on, and they're having, you know, some questions marks with Sean Smith, the one corner right now, and so on. But I think Dansby brings a lot. I think Chad Henne showed a lot of moxie last year in getting thrown into the job in late September. This was a team, by the way, that beat the New York Jets twice last year.
Yep.
Kind of wilted a little down the stretch and so on. But, they are my pick. And it's funny you use the word calendar in the beginning of the paragraph, because I agree, the Miami Dolphins are on the calendar. To me, the Buffalo Bills seem to be a team that might be on the clock fairly soon. And no disrespect and
wow.
So on. But the Buffalo Bills have not been to the playoffs since 1999.
Mm.
This was a team that went to the playoffs 8 times in 10 years in the decade of the 90s and did not go the previous decade.
Right.
And any time, unfortunately, these days you're mentioned in the same sentence as the Detroit Lions, it's not necessarily a good thing. But the Bills and the Lions own the current longest playoff droughts in the league, 1999.
Wow.
And in a league where everybody makes the playoffs, you know, except those two teams and the Texans, and that might change this year.
Sure.
It's rough going. Listen, they have C.J. Spiller, but they look very unsettled at quarterback. And more important than anything else, and we'll probably get to this when we talk about some of these other games, very unsettled in the lines. Their offensive line has been an issue for a number of years. They're making a transition to a 3-4. I don't know if they necessarily have the bodies to do that. I unfortunately think with how strong the AFC East is this year, they're going to be hard-pressed to win a game or two in that division, even though last year they did beat the Jets and did beat the Dolphins. They haven't beaten New England in a long time. They've lost 13 in a row to them. I just think it's going to be maybe perhaps another troubling year for a franchise that is really treading water right now.
You brought up the Texans, and obviously they've got a, you know, they open at home against the Colts, which would be certainly one of the favorites, I think, in the AFC. My personal thought is I like San Diego because I think the schedule plays out very well for the Chargers on down the line, but the Colts certainly are not going to go anywhere. And yet it's an interesting test for the Texans, and I think I'm in that camp, and I'm slowly coming around to the Texans' side of the things. I think they get off the playoff schneid this year, or they're going to be as close as they can be without getting in.
Well, I like them to win the AFC South, as a matter of fact.
Do you? Okay.
And I'm afraid to tip my hand here, but I might as well. I am actually picking the Houston Texans to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yes.
And based on what?
Well, based on the fact that this is a league where anything can happen, I think Houston is not only going to get off the – you know, sometimes when you finally get off the schneid, you really get off the schneid.
Yeah.
And the confidence grows. And who would have thought 2 years ago the Arizona Cardinals were going to be in the Super Bowl? And who still would have thought last year the New Orleans Saints would win the Super Bowl? You know, these were teams that were both, I believe, coming off 8 and 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans, now, of course, they've got some major, major albatrosses in their own division. They are 1-15 lifetime versus the Colts. They are 4-12 lifetime versus the Tennessee Titans. This was a team that was 9-7 last year and 1-5 in their own division. So you do the math. They were 8-2 outside the division last year.
Wow.
It's just a hunch. Again, this is a league where annually 4, 5, 6 teams change every year when it comes to the playoffs. And little known fact, do you know, and I'm the same, Houston's going to win the Super Bowl. You've seen this in the last 13, 14 years. Teams that have never been to the Super Bowl, making Super Bowl appearances. We've had 6 teams in the last 13 years that have never won a Super Bowl, won their first Super Bowl. Denver, New England, Baltimore, as in the Ravens, New Orleans, Tampa Bay.
Tampa, yeah.
The Rams.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the league has become. It is parity. And the tournament... You know, I've kidded sometimes that this, you know, that the NFL playoffs has become the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't we just go back the last 5 postseasons, okay?
Okay.
We have seen twice a team win 3 road playoff games in the Super Bowl.
In the last the 5
Pittsburgh
years.
In the last yeah. 5 years.
Okay.
We have seen an undefeated team lose the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Okay? We saw the New Orleans Saints and the Arizona Cardinals, who have been down franchises a long time, one reach the Super Bowl, one win the Super Bowl, and then a league dominated by quarterbacks. The last 3 quarterbacks to lose the Super Bowl are named Tom Brady, Kurt Warner, and Peyton Manning.
All good points. All interesting facts, too.
Well, we try to stick with facts.
Then why not the Texans? All right, let me put it to you this way, then. Who faces the Texans in the Super Bowl?
Well, I think it would be interesting, and again, I didn't do this for spectacular fashion and so on, but since we are going to have this magnificent stadium.
You're picking the Cowboys?
I am picking the Dallas Cowboys to defeat the Houston Texans in the Super Bowl.
So it would be a home field win for the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. That would be, I'm telling you, the ground would open up and swallow everybody in Dallas-Fort Worth.
An all-Texas Super Bowl.
Yeah, it'd be an all-Texas Super Bowl.
Why not?
That's, oh my goodness.
Why not? And Hod, think of the irony that a team finally gets to host a Super Bowl in its own stadium.
And they win it.
And winds up sharing the limelight with the other team in the state.
Yeah, and then you're going to end up having everybody try to put in bids for the Super Bowl.
And guess what? If my Super Bowl picks are wrong, hopefully I'll still have my job next year. As we all were, because 99.9% of us are usually wrong with these things. But again, I just get the sense it's going to be kind of a wacky year.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a down year for some of the traditional powers around the league and so on. And, you know, as we talk a little further, I have my own theory as to why. Because, again, we talk a lot about this being a quarterback league, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's something very vital to being a quarterback the league, and that's the guys up front protecting those guys and so on.
Yeah.
And there are some teams, especially in the AFC, who have some question marks along their offensive lines that, to me, raises flags for concern.
Okay. But so I take it you like them to beat the Colts at home then in the opener.
Yes, I do. And listen, trust me, this is not a series that's gone their well. Just throw this out here. They are 1-15 against the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
They have lost six straight games to the Indianapolis Colts.
I know, but they've also lost some of those games in spectacular fashion,
Well,
too.
And that's my point. The last 2 years they have played in Houston. One courtesy of Sage Rosenfels, and last year, who are you going to blame?
Yeah.
They have blown a 17-point lead in their own building two years in a row.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I already alluded to offensive line issues. The Colts go in here with a hamper of Jeff Saturday at center, their Pro Bowl center.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Hugo, who was going to play left guard, has now been waived injured and probably will wind up on IR for the team. Their left tackle, Charlie Johnson, doesn't look like he's going to play. So you take a team that finished last in the league in rushing, you take the who has yet to kind of prove that they're going to play anything but more than one-dimensional football, and you go on the road to play a team with a very respectable front and so on, I just think it's, if not now, when for the Houston Texans. And I'm not going to say it's going to be the biggest game in their franchise history because they had about nine of them last year.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you week, the biggest game in franchise history. But they finally had their first winning season, and I think sometimes, maybe, just maybe, the time might be right. Do I think Houston's the best team in the AFC? Not necessarily. But I just think maybe the cards play out for them this year. And like I said, I've been wrong before.
Well,
maybe about 40 times when it comes to
I do like them as a very strong playoff possibility. I will definitely give you that. You mentioned the Cowboys. Let me sneak in a couple other games very quickly here if I can. The Cowboys at the Redskins, a traditional NFL rivalry that has lost a lot of the luster because the Redskins largely have been down. What's the buzz, in your opinion, with the Redskins under Mike Shanahan this year? And this game is Sunday night. At RFK, at FedEx Field, so the Cowboys have to open up on the road.
Yeah, they do. And, this series, the last three times they played, weird number, but I'll throw it out there, 54 points total in the last three games these teams have played with each other.
That's all?
That's it. 54 points total.
Good grief.
Okay, we've had a 7-6 in there. We've had a 14-10 in there. I think we had a 17-0 the last time they played. Washington's offense is kind of wilted playing against Dallas's defense and so on. It was great of you to ask about the Washington Redskins without bringing up Albert Watts' name.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, whatever he's worth.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, that's been the headline for the Washington Redskins. And that's been the Washington Redskins for a long time under their current ownership regime and so on. So this is a team that goes out and spends a lot of money, brings in a lot of new faces. They lack continuity. And this year, hopefully they have the right guy and a football guy. And I'm not going to diminish anything Mike Shanahan's ever done and so on. But first things first, this was a team last year that did not win a game in the division. They've lost three in a row to the Cowboys. And we're not sure what we're going to get out of them and so on. Don McNabb has already admitted that he's a little hobbled and so on. It's a new system. We know they're going to try to run the football. That's what Mike Shanahan does and so on. Make over at the receiver spot, respectable tight ends with Chris Cooley and Fred Davis and so on. But I don't know if they have any kind of necessarily firepower to keep up with the Cowboys. I know the Cowboys have their own little issues on the offensive line, probably temporary. Kyle Kozier a little banged up. Mark Colombo doesn't look like he's going to play. But I get the feeling Alex Barron's going to wind up being their right tackle all year anyway, to be honest with you. I think Dallas needs to get off to a smart start here. I don't think they need to necessarily send a state, make a statement or anything like that. They need to go about their business. I think they're a very talented team, and then one of the things I loved that the Cowboys did in this offseason was virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That to me is a sign if your hand is said they went out and got Alex Barron. They made a trade with the Rams to get him. He's a guy who can play left and right tackle. They obviously had some issues with Lozell Adams, who's no longer there. He's now in Pittsburgh and so on. So Dallas and Washington, hey, it might be a little down, but it's still the Cowboys and the Redskins, yeah. And I still think it has a lot of intrigue.
ESPN has not one but two games on Monday night, so it's a doubleheader, which is a great way for you guys to kick off the season. Ravens at the Jets at 7, and then Chargers at the Chiefs at 10:15 Eastern time.
Yeah, thank goodness Darrell Revis came back, so now we can stop talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that obviously is not going to – you know, listen, there's been a lot of Jets discussion in this offseason. They had the great run in the playoffs last year. People forget, these are the two teams that have lost the last two AFC championship games.
Correct.
Okay, Baltimore, of course, losing to Pittsburgh, the Jets losing to the Colts year before. You know, the Ravens are become a very chic Super Bowl pick in their conference as well. Just add T.J. Houshmandzadeh to a receiving core that now has Anquan Boldin. You know, they seem solid offensively. It seems odd to say this, John, but this is a Ravens team that for a change we're wondering about their defense, especially the secondary. It's not something you're used to saying in Baltimore. You're always worried about, well, how are they going to put points on the board? Oh, their defense will return something. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how people attack the Baltimore Ravens. They might just want to come out in there and throw. They have no Ed Reed for the first 6 weeks of the season. I think this is a real intriguing game. I mean, obviously, Rex Ryan knows the Baltimore personnel as well. And I think the Jets, to me, it's, you almost want to flip a coin with this game because I think both these teams are going to be in the playoff mix. It'll be the team that can run the football a little more consistently. And I think I'm leaning a little toward the Baltimore Ravens, unless they decide to do what they did at the beginning of last year, which was become a passing team first and then run. As you know, in the playoffs last year, they reversed that trend, and they played that kind of football the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not totally convinced that the Jets, as staunch as they are defensively, are necessarily a great run defense. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a little patient, and we'll see just what kind of shape Chris Jenkins is in coming back from an injury plague season and so on. Yeah. I think it'll be real, real interesting. I'm kind of leaning toward the Ravens. I think they're just right now at this stage a little more of a veteran team.
A little more complete
than the
yeah.
Jets are.
Yeah, I would agree. Chargers are my favorite in the AFC, with all due respect to your Houston Texans pick.
Well, that's all right.
I think their schedule lays out pretty well for them, but they've always had trouble with the Chiefs.
Yeah, although last year they dominated them, and then they've kind of had their number a little the last couple of years, although some of those they played 1 year against against Kansas City 2 years ago, and they won one game,
mm-hmm.
each game by a point.
Right.
So you're right, they have struggled against them a little bit. I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas City pulled a little bit of a surprise here. I just wouldn't be shocked. I'm not as high on the Chargers as you are this year. And, you know, remember I alluded to about 5 minutes ago the offensive line issues and stuff. This is another one of those teams, like Indianapolis, like New England, of course, with Logan Mankins, and you probably know better than I are what the timetable for Nick Kazar is after his back surgery. It's two key components.
Yeah, we assume that at some point in time he will return. Only because
right,
they
did not put him on injured reserve.
Correct.
So obviously
correct.
They seem to feel that he has
a chance to play.
A chance to come back.
Yeah.
But left tackle in San Diego is a young man named Marcus McNeil, who is not with the team. As much as we have talked Vincent Jackson around the media for the last month or so, is he going to get dealt? Is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? Let's not forget a former Pro Bowler, Marcus McNeil, their left tackle. Okay, so you look at some of these teams, the Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, around the league, questions about the guys up front who are protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that works. And, of course, in Phillip Rivers, not only a guy who protects him, the left tackle, his along with Antonio Gates, his two favorite targets are out of the lineup. I don't know if Kansas City has been dismal on defense. They, of course, their coaching staff, you're very familiar with,
mm-hmm.
as you are their front office personnel and their quarterback and so on. It's like in the Patriots expansion team in Kansas City. But I don't know if they've improved that much dramatically in this offseason on defense, and they were a very slow defensive team last year, to offset what San Diego brings. And I think at the very least, early on, we're going to get strong doses of the Chargers from the rookie Ryan Matthews, the running back out of Fresno State. And Darren Sproles is just too fast for that Kansas City defense.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. So we've got the Patriots on the schedule with the Ravens, the Jets, the Chargers, and obviously there's a lot of familiarity with the Chiefs as far as the Monday night games are concerned, which brings us to the Patriots and the Bengals. And I think the thought process around here, Russell, is that the Patriots could be in some trouble. There are three of us, and I'm counting out of the five of us total here that broadcast on our programs here that actually like the Bengals to win this game on Sunday.
Well, I obviously wouldn't be surprised, and I actually like Cincinnati to repeat in the AFC North, to be honest with you. I think maybe for at least this week, this could be a tough matchup for Cincinnati. New England does a lot of things that can catch you off guard and so on. Now, I will say this. If Cincinnati decides to rear back and play smash-mouth football against the Patriots, I'd be concerned in the fourth quarter with the youth of Cincinnati's of New England's defense.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they're necessarily going to come out and do that right away and so on. I think they'd be well-served to try it. But you know as well as anyone, New England is up 10-0. They're up 14-0. Teams have a tendency to panic. So I think the tempo of this game is going to be very, very important for Cincinnati because, as we know, last year they were a team that relied a little more on the run, but relied even more so when Chris Henry got hurt. And obviously we know he eventually died and so on, which had nothing to do with, I don't want to correlate his death with their demise. When he broke his arm in the middle of the season in the game against the Ravens and they lost him for the season as a player, their offense struggled to stretch the field. They're hoping they get that back with Terrell Owens and so on. They thought they might have had it with Antonio Bryant. Now they think they have it with Terrell Owens and so on.
Yep.
But it'll be interesting to see how they approach this. Are they going to approach this trying to pound New England? Which, by the way, the loss of Ty Warren on their defensive front
is huge.
He's not one of the five most underrated defensive players in the league. Then I have the wrong list.
Yep.
Okay.
Losing the experience in the defensive backfield that they had with Lee Bodden.
Absolutely.
Brandon McGowan, a big hitter that comes in and plays in a lot of the big nickel packages that they've had in the past. I mean, I just chipping away at this. The Patriots would be fortunate, I think, to be in a lot of 35-31 games, and I'm not sure they can win them all.
And I think that's going to be their approach. And I think I'm thinking at least maybe 1 week, just 1 week, they catch a team that maybe is not sure what it wants to be offensively this year. And so on.
Yeah.
And, I think where the Patriots' problems are really going to surface are when they play the Dolphins and when they play the Jets. I don't know if they necessarily will surface when they play against the Bills. It's going to be the teams that know them really, really well. Cincinnati is not necessarily a team that knows the New England Patriots very, very well. They play them about every 3 years. Okay? I think the last time they played them was on Monday night in 2007. Okay? So this is not a team that is overly familiar with what New England does. So I think that works a little against Cincinnati, at least for 1 week, and I'm kind of leaning toward the Patriots in this game.
All right. Well, Patriots fans would be very happy to hear you say that because I think there's a lot of nervous Nellies around here.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, listen, I don't have them going to the Super Bowl, but if they want to show me some appreciation for at least picking them in week one, that would be great.
I'll show you some appreciation, Russ. We'll take care of that. Thank you, my friend, for
welcome.
Agreeing to be with us again this season and for chatting with us. And we look forward to doing this for the rest of the regular season as your schedule permits. And it's great to talk football with you. It's great to talk with you. You're a good friend and certainly appreciate your spending the time with us.
Well, as I told you before, John, I'd like actually having a conversation about football and have not someone yelling at me telling me everything they know. It could be 100 people, but it's called sports talk radio. It's not sports yell radio.
Yeah, well, that's also very true. Russell, thank you. We'll talk next week.
You got it, John.
All right, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. All, you know, television, radio, ESPN.com, everything that is ESPN, including the magazine. He's the head of all things NFL there. Let's take a break here, Kev, and then we've got some time here. We still got 10, 15 minutes left in the program for today. If you haven't had a chance to get your predictions in for the Bengals game on Sunday, now is the time. Send it via Facebook chat or email us, webradio@patriots.com. We've got time for you to pick up the phone and call if you'd like to do so, 508-543-7482 in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
All right, on the downside here for the playbook, our opening week of Patriots playbook and our opening week of the regular season as the Pats get set for the Cincinnati Bengals. We're glad you're aboard. Hopefully you've learned a little bit over the last couple of days of programs here, and you have this kind of thing in store for you throughout the next 16 weeks. Something to look forward to, right? And hopefully we have a week or two thereafter. That is, if the Patriots can somehow get their way into the playoffs, which is so far ahead, it's probably not worth talking about. But I know that, you know, as fans, we will be talking about it at some point. Couple of other emails for you here. First of all, I got a Facebook chat message here from Steven, who says, you know, we were referring to the Tom Brady accident earlier. Then he says, are you ready for the car wreck that is the Pats D? He says, 8-8 is being optimistic given the brutal schedule. Frankly, I kind of tend to agree with that, Steven. I just think, you know, the way that the schedule lines up, talked a little bit about this on yesterday's show. I mean, at Jets next week. First of all, you're open up with Cincinnati, who's, you know, going to be, I think, considered a favorite in the AFC North, as we've been talking about. At the Jets, at the Dolphins on October 4. Then after the bye week, you have Ravens at Chargers, Vikings. 3 weeks in a row after the bye week, Ravens at Chargers, Vikings. Then you get a relative cupcake maybe and at the Browns before you have at Steelers, Colts. You play a Thanksgiving game at the Lions, then you come back with Jets, at Bears, Packers, at Bills, Dolphins. There's just not a breather in there. There's just not. But that stretch, that three-week stretch following the bye week is as brutal, I think, a three-week stretch as maybe any team has in the entire NFL this year. And the Patriots' schedule, I think, was ranked, what, fifth toughest in the league? Fourth or fifth in terms of combined one-loss record of their total opponents. Ravens, Chargers, Vikings in a row to wrap up the month of October. That stretch is going to... that stretch is going to make, that's going to be something. That's going to be difficult. Let me share one more email here with you. John has his game prediction. He says, welcome back for another season. Thank you. In light of Brady's car accident being as significant as the hurricane last week, I'm picking the Pats to win. I think it'll be a competitive game with our young defense, but I think we'll still outscore the Bengals. On a side note, I also think that if Chad Ocho Johnson, he says, does happen to score and tries to take a gun from a Minuteman, he'll be shot. You know, that was obviously a side issue that was we were going through last week. We didn't really talk about this week when Ocho Cinco tweeted that that's what he wanted to do if he scored a touchdown Foxborough.
I think we've informed the Musket Men that that is indeed his plan.
Yes.
And to,
what would be hilarious, though, is for and I think would be – would you're talking about something that would make every TV show on the planet is if he scores a touchdown, which is – you know, let's say there's at least a 50-50, if not better, chance of that happening on Sunday. If he were to set something up in advance with the Minutemen, where he's like, I'm going to come to you, but why don't you guys just, you know, fire the gun at me and I'll drop dead in the end zone. You know, and just, you know, or at least hold the guns and then he can hold the football up and just collapse in the end zone. Now, that would be funny. That would be hysterical. He would get tremendous PR value out of it. Yeah. It would make every highlight reel on the entire free world, might even make it in, you know, might even make it in Afghanistan too. You never know. I'm just saying that would be a stroke of brilliant PR genius on his part. Setting it up like he is, like, I'm going to go take one of those Minutemen guns and I'm going to fire it off, blah, blah, blah. And then he sets it up in advance with the Minutemen and says, dudes, play with me here. I'm going to come over to you. I'm going to try to take your gun, but what I want you to do is aim it at me. Don't shoot it. But I'm gonna, like, you know, fall dead in the end zone, and that would be hysterical. People would laugh, and I think people would really look at him differently.
And what I think is funny too is that the Patriots people here are actually taking the steps to warn the actual Minutemen.
The Minutemen
and
that that's going
to
happen.
Reach out to the Bengals PR and be like, hey, those are real muskets. Tell them to leave them alone.
Well, they do fire blanks, but
yes.
they also fire real gunpowder.
Yes, they do.
Because so I'm just saying, if you actually pointed that gun in close range of somebody, you're liable to get a pretty nasty gunpowder burn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it would hurt you, in other words. No bullets, obviously, to be fired, but you'd still get hurt by this.
And our executive producer here at Patriots.com Radio, Jason Dvorkin, actually came up with the idea of why don't we have the musket men put bayonets on the end of those things.
That's a great – now, see, that would also be funny. That would also be funny. He could come up to him, and then all the musket men could surround him with bayonets on the end of the guns. Dude is going to be running the other way.
Yep.
Right? That would be hysterical.
It would be.
People would go nuts over that. See, this is a great opportunity for wonderful comedic PR.
I agree.
It's a great opportunity. That could have been a question of the day too. What should the Musketmen? What should the Minutemen do?
But unfortunately, with the NFL the way it is now, it also has the opportunity to be a great fine for somebody as well.
Big fine. But that's why you can turn this. I mean, you know, and maybe Chad is really more brilliant than sometimes we give him credit for. You know, he uses, you know, Twitter. We heard this from him in his conference call yesterday. He's been one of the players to really be up there and out front about using Twitter, and he is in touch. Give him credit. He is in touch with his fans,
he's a
what have you.
Social networking master.
Yes, he is. He's a social networking master. Does a great job with it. You could turn this into a scenario where, keep in mind now, okay, that he's getting ready to be a network television host. He's got this show coming up with T.O. that's going to be on Versus.
And he's already got the dating show that's on right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, here's a guy that's already thinking post-career in terms of his marketability.
Yeah.
So, you know, he and his agent and or his handlers are all thinking, I think, along the right way, down the right lines. And maybe this is part of their scheme. Hey, let's do this. You got the opening week, yada, yada. It's brilliant if it is. I give him a lot of credit.
Yes, it was like the whole thing, was it last year in the preseason where they let him kick all the extra points?
Yeah.
The kickoffs?
Brilliant, brilliant. you're talking Chad Ochocinco. You're talking about a guy who, you know, you want to hate, but you can't because the guy's just funny and he's creative.
And that's amazing, by the way, what he did. Like, you know, you think back to Welker when he was playing for the Dolphins.
Yeah,
he actually
yeah.
kicked against the Patriots. Guys that can do that are just amaze me.
Well, I think it's just, I think it's, you know, I hope that, you know, we see something. And my guess is we'll see something. I just don't know what it will be on Sunday.
Well, unfortunately for Patriots fans, this game on Sunday, you know, it will have, most likely, have Chad will have the ability to get in the end zone a few times against this secondary.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, well, I gave you my score, my prediction a little bit earlier. I said Bengals 31-30 was my prediction for Sunday. I, as a Patriots fan, hope that I'm wrong. I was 13-3, however, last year picking the Patriots games. But that was last year, and this is this year. I base my prediction for Sunday largely on my lack of confidence in the defense as a whole, but certainly in the secondary. I've banged on Darius Butler's backside quite a bit already this week.
Yep.
I hope he proves me wrong.
You've given him a good spanking.
I have given him a good spanking, just like I've given Lawrence Maroney a verbal thrashing.
Which he deserves.
Over the course of the last 4 years since he's been here. I hope he doesn't turn out to be another Maroney, which is basically another bust. But I'm sensing that he could start down that path.
He is. Already
I hope
down.
I'm wrong.
Yeah, he is already on that path. I would agree.
So I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But we will hopefully, I'm guessing, we'll know at least a little more, if not a lot more, this time next week when we meet
we
next week.
And it's you know, like you said, you think the secondary is going to struggle. It's just those edge rushers in the secondary, they go hand in hand. Because if you get no heat on the quarterback and Carson Palmer has, you know, three Mississippi, four Mississippi,
right.
I don't care who it is. It could be Mark Sanchez. It could be anybody back there that's going to pick them apart.
That's totally correct. Totally
so
correct.
We'll see what happens. Those are the two areas, the edge rushing and the DBs. We'll see if they hold up.
Agreed. If by some chance you were just late tuning in, just to recap briefly, the story of the day had to do with Brady's being in a two-car accident near his home around 6:30 this morning. He was unhurt. He did attend practice here at Gillette earlier today. He arrived at the stadium, was involved in parts of meetings, was involved in the walkthrough, took part in the practice session. Players told reporters that Coach Belichick briefed the team that Brady was in the accident. He would be late. They basically downplayed it, didn't make it seem like it was anything serious. It was not anything serious, although the jaws of life were called in to extricate the passenger in the van that ran the red light that Brady ended up T-boning in his Audi. On my Facebook page, I still got a picture of Brady's car that was being towed off. It definitely, you know, there's certainly front-end damage on it, but the van was much worse for the wear than Brady's car was. So I think we're all very fortunate that something more serious did not happen. My guess is he'll probably feel it a little bit tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, kind of like playing a game maybe without pads.
And like we had a caller earlier in the day, I think who had been in a car accident, a pretty good one, calling, and sometimes you just don't feel the effects and the ramifications from that.
Usually
impact.
After 24 to 36 hours is when
so
you
we'll
start
see
feeling
what he feels
it
like when he wakes up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Fortunately for the team, they don't need to travel anywhere, so he can just kind of lay low the next couple days.
Right, absolutely. So that's the story. Now, what are we doing after the show today? Because I know B-Lo came on earlier this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, we will be looping.
We're replaying?
We will be.
Okay. And then, so we'll bring back B-Lo's fantasy lowdown from Tuesday, since he had to fill in for an hour for me on Tuesday. We'll have our regular Patriots playbook scheduled next week from 2 until 4 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
And if you missed the first half or the first portion of our playbook section today.
It replays.
Yes, it does replay. So we'll be replaying in a few hours.
And or you can download the podcast.
Or the podcast at patriots.com.
There you go.
The
so many ways for you to get to it. But I'm very happy to be back with you this season. Very happy to be talking some football with Patriots fans everywhere. You know, make sure if you haven't and you're of a mind to do so, you can look me up on Facebook. We'll friend you. We can chat during the program or any other time you might catch me online about the Patriots. That's cool to do. Make sure you also stay a contributor to the show here because, hey, this show is about you. It's for you. We're here so you can get whatever information we have about the New England Patriots every week. And that's one of the great things about Patriots.com radio is the fact that while your regular sports stations might be talking about other things, we're talking all Patriots, all football, all the time. And that's something that the other guys can't say at this stage of the game. So happy to be back with you again for year 10 Inside Patriots Playbook. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next Tuesday, everybody.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines, Patriots.com. Radio.